We're setting mobile ad hoc networks with the following characteristics. Every node has got a fixed number of high gain, or what we mean by that is kind of narrow beam, steerable directional antennae. So this is different from the conventional kind of ad hoc networks, which use kind of omnidirectional antennae. And essentially, the main restriction this places on us is that a node can only support this number of communication links at any instant, whereas in a kind of conventional ad hoc network, everything is kind of connected to everything within its broadcast range, and you go on to discuss different issues, perhaps, with regard to their operation. And the second requirement is that servers for the network need to be located at some subset of the nodes in such a way that the kind of traffic overhead associated with implementing this system are kind of minimized. The work's been done in tandem with the Ministry of Defense. We tried to ask them why do you need these servers, but they wouldn't tell us. They just said we want servers at the node, the kind of secretive bunch, I think, by nature, these military guys. So before I get into it, a few advantages of using these high-gain steerable directional antennae. Firstly, they give you reduced radio interference because the signal's kind of focused in one particular direction. And that means, in the first instance, improved use of the wireless medium. You can kind of use the spectrum more efficiently in that way. And you get increased network capacity for the same reason. You get a higher signal-to-noise ratio. So if you keep the power constant in a node, then you can get a longer range. Or otherwise, if you want to keep the same kind of transmission range, then you use less power at the node. And the third thing, which is probably why the military are interested in these things, is that they're effective in hostile environments because there's low probability of detection. Because if the communication is only going in one way, then somebody listening in, perhaps over in that region, won't are less likely to hear you. And it's more robust against jamming. But there we are. That's just a bit of a technical background. It wasn't really what we set out to do. So an outline of the talk. First, I'm going to construct a graph theoretic model of the problem. That's what most of us do. As a first step. I'm going to identify our design objectives for the network in terms of this model. Thirdly, then, I'm going to describe an optimization strategy, i.e. we want to kind of optimize certain desirable network characteristics framed in terms of these design objectives in the model. And the scheme we've used is a taboo search. It's a kind of meta-heuristic optimization technique. And this is basically an extremely unsatisfactory aspect of our research. The group's had quite a lot of success applying these kind of strategies to issues in cellular networks, cell planning, and so forth. But that's a kind of one-shot kind of computation. You can say, you know, put your antennas there, and there, and you need less of them, etc. And it works quite well. But in a kind of dynamic ad hoc network environment, and you've got to do this computation all the time, it isn't really the way forward. That perhaps is one of the conclusions of this talk. And if I have time, then I'll indicate some results under simulation. I've got a cutoff point there. Okay, a bit of graphics to begin with. Then we've got a set of autonomous nodes. They can move anywhere they like. We don't assume anything about their mobility patterns. And as I said, every node has got a broadcast range. So these antennae are operating at a fixed power that we don't consider any kind of variation of the power at any of these nodes. And so this then defines a set of potential links, which we model as a graph, G. Right, okay, so moving on. Every node has got a maximum degree constraint, and this corresponds to the number of steerable directional antennae sited at each node. And therefore, a feasible design, one that we can actually build, must respect these constraints, so you've got a lot less edges. So this is one of the... So we model this then as a spanning subgraph, or a subgraph that goes through all the nodes. And of course, one of the design objectives, or one of the things we kind of seek to do is to pick a kind of optimal subset of these kind of potential links to actually instantiate, so that we can fulfil our design objectives or optimise in a certain way. Okay, so our first design objective is to find a spanning subgraph such that network connectivity is high, and this is motivated by the need for reliability. And secondly, that this connectivity is maintained under mobility. Now, we don't assume anything about the mobility, so you might think, how are we going to do this? Well, I'll move on to that later on. But the objective function that we chose to try and optimize this reliability was as stated there, kappa here, kappa of U and V, is the number of edge disjoint paths between node U and node V. So if you had four edge disjoint paths, like paths with no edges in common, then at least four edges have to fail before they become disconnected. Now, in a kind of arbitrary kind of graph, this is although it's kind of polynomial, you can do it with kind of maximum flow algorithms, it still takes a long time. And it looks at first like that's a big O n squared kind of sum, because you're doing it for every pair of nodes. And we have managed to improve that to a big O n being the number of nodes, if I didn't mention it earlier, using cut trees, but it still takes a long time to compute. So when you're doing taboo search, genetic algorithms, meta-heuristic search, you need to evaluate these kinds of designs very quickly. And so this is kind of part of the reason why this strategy isn't really going to work in the real world. But anyway, we aim to maximize this, so we get the most robust network possible. Okay, so serving nodes. We need to select a subset of the nodes, S here, to host these servers. I've colored those in red. As I said, I'm not quite sure why we need to do this, although obviously, they're going to kind of facilitate the operation of the network in some way. So the server traffic overhead, we estimate it by the length of the shortest path. First of all, between every pair of serving nodes, so any updates arriving at one serving node need to be communicated to everything else. So this is a unicast model. And then every non-serving node, it's the minimum path length between every non-serving node and its nearest serving node. So what we're trying to do is minimize the kind of number of hops between a non-serving node and its nearest serving node. And as we heard in the presentation for coffee this morning, it's not necessarily minimizing the kind of number of hops. That isn't always going to be the best thing, especially if you're considering power. Sometimes it's better to do a lot of short hops than a couple of long ones. So, there are all these conflicting objectives. So, and actually, in the figure there, what we show there is a different kind of model for the synchronization traffic. That would be a kind of multicast model. So what we see there is a kind of Steiner tree. It's a minimum length tree connecting all serving nodes. So this is another way, but that's kind of more difficult to calculate. It takes, well, it's NP hard, but even an approximate one takes a bit longer than just a pairwise path length metric, if you like. So our second design objective is to identify this set S. So the first of all, non-application traffic is minimized, as I said. And then again, we want this to remain small as the nodes move around. Okay? So here's the objective function. Every pair of serving nodes, this is a minimum path length. And then for every non-serving node, it's the minimum path length between it and its nearest serving node. And we need to minimize this kind of metric, if you like, this measure of traffic. Right, so we're moving on to our third design objective. As I indicated, we want to maintain adequate network reliability or connectivity and also adequate server traffic overheads under the influence of mobility. Now, we don't assume anything about how these things are going to move, so how are we going to do it? Well, for any potential link, E, between nodes U and V, define its maximum length to be the minimum of the range of U and the range of V. So there we are. I mean, we're kind of connected by a link. There is a potential link between us. And this length can be stretched to this amount, this kind of max length, as U and V move apart from each other. Until, of course, if it goes out of the range of one or the other, it's going to break. We're assuming a kind of bidirectional link here. And then, given that definition of the maximum length of one of these potential links, define rho, which we call the robustness of the link, to be the difference between the maximum length and the actual length. So what we're trying to say is, short links are better, because if I'm kind of connected, to somebody who's close, and we've both got long transmission ranges, then we can move around a lot before this link breaks. But if I try and connect somebody right at the limit of my transmission range, then of course we may have to move a couple of units, yards, whatever, before the link breaks, and it's not so good, So what we're trying to do is we're trying to maximize the kind of lifetime. We're trying to say, build these links and then let the thing move around watch the performance diminish until it becomes inadequate, until the thing blows up. So rho we call the robustness of the link, and its endpoints can move at least this distance relative to each other, that is, before the link fails. So this is essentially the kernel of the idea of the whole paper. It's a pretty simple idea. So, okay, we define the survivability of the network design to be the sum of the robustness of its links. It's something, I'm not sure about the validity of that, really. I mean, I'm sure there are other considerations regarding survivability, like power. It's one thing that I've had in the back of my mind for a while. is you know, the kind of power consumption at the node. So short links perhaps are better from that perspective. But you know, so it was nice this morning to speak before coffee, you know, to kind of give a good exposition of these issues. It's something that I'll hopefully I can go back and think about. So I'm not going to dwell on this meta-heuristic search. You know, we've got a huge search space of feasible designs, all spanning subgraphs, and for each one of these spanning subgraphs, we've got data space where we put the nodes. So we divide, you know, as we're trying to navigate the search space, we do node moves, activate a node, edge moves. I don't really like this approach, you know, because it's difficult to know what's going on, you know, and that's why I kind of enjoyed Latta's talk yesterday, using the kind of constructive method, because you can really see what's happening. You know, this is all kind of, it seems like blind searching in a way, although there's obviously a certain direction. So there we are. We've used taboo search, but a genetic algorithm or something like that might do the job. So what we've done, we haven't employed any sophisticated multi-objective optimization techniques. We've just done a kind of weighted sum, essentially. On the left-hand column, we haven't really considered the traffic. We've optimized, first of all, with respect to just survivability, so let's just build short links, you know, the shorter the better, or the more robust the better, perhaps. And then just with respect to the connectivity, and then with respect to a combination of the two things. And then on the other side, we do the same combinations, but also include the traffic objective function within our search. And so we kind of go through this. We kind of put together some kind of initial design and a very just a random one really. It didn't really matter. And then we go through the optimization procedure with each of these combinations of objective functions. And then given these designs, then we kind of do a comparative evaluation of them using a simple mobility simulator. It's just the simulator is very very straightforward, as we've heard them described previously today and yesterday. They just take a random step in a random direction, and you know, I'm sure that, you know, given any real life situation, you wouldn't really get that kind of random walk. There will be patterns, but this is just the simplicity really. So okay, the first graph indicates the network reliability. This is the number of iterations of the simulator. You can see this is essentially the time axis. This is the connectivity. It's kind of normalized. Don't worry about the scale on the left axis. What we can see is that if we compare the purple line optimized with respect to connectivity only, and the blue line optimized with respect to survivability only, you can see the purple line connectivity only starts off very very highly connected. You'd expect that, you know, because we were searching just on that criteria, with survivability somewhat lower. But as you can see, As the node moves around, the connectivity of the purple design, shall I call it, diminishes very rapidly, and at this point falls below the connectivity of the blue line, which wasn't optimized with respect to connectivity in any way. So this indicates that perhaps building selecting edges on the basis of their robustness means that the kind of means that it sort of performs adequately for longer. Well, assuming that, you know, adequate gets beyond this point there. And a combination of both objectives seems to have the best of both worlds. This is indicated by the red line. So it starts off high and stays high, you know. So this is the kind of idea. And the initial graph, the green line, is because it wasn't constructed in any way using any intelligent methods, you know, it's obviously going to be the worst one. So the same graph now, but now with traffic built into the objective function. And again, we see this kind of. I think what I'd like to point out about this graph is that the two designs that incorporated survivability, i.e. the blue and the red, you know, this kind of concave kind of signature. So the kind of connectivity reliability holds up as the nodes move around, as the kind of simulator goes through its iterations. You know, it's sort of more robust against edge failures, whereas those not incorporating survivability, this kind of robustness of the edges, they seem to kind of deteriorate rapidly at the beginning. But this is kind of to be expected, I suppose, because, you know, the edges weren't selected to be robust. You know, they could have selected a very long edge right at the limit of its transmission range, and of course these edges are going to break straight away. So you get this initial very very rapid decline in the connectivity and the reliability. So, for us, okay, let's look at server traffic. Again, the same four designs, perhaps ignore the initial one. What we do is, as the nodes move around in the simulation, we plot the increase in network traffic. As links fail, you know, according to our metric, the attract overheads can only increase. When the link fails, we don't reconnect it afterwards. Perhaps I should have pointed that out. And these steps in the graph correspond to points at which the network became disconnected, and then we have to hit it with quite a heavy penalty then, because the minimum path length won't be defined between two nodes in different components. So again, we can see that the one incorporating survivability, which is the designs incorporating survivability, seem to do pretty well. Although I think that the actual connectivity seems to have more of an influence here. But you know, the red line again seems to give you the best of both worlds. It's not entirely clear the significance of that graph. It's just a test case, really. I mean, I see that we need to do this over many, many designs, perhaps 100 different networks, and average out the statistics to kind of get rid of any statistical fluctuation. Finally, just the number of edges in the graph, just to bring out the kind of thing I'm talking about. We can see that the graph optimized with respect to connectivity and traffic started with the most edges, but you know, a lot of these edges fail very quickly, whereas the ones that incorporated survivability don't lose an edge so quickly, so you get this, you know, they kind of survive an adequate level for longer. This is what I hope these graphs indicate. I should have a bit of time here. So I've got a network performance indicator. The first row indicates the disconnection time, the time at which the graph separates into two components. And we can see that building in survivability here and here means that it kind of lives longer. This is the number of iterations, so time, number of iterations on the simulator. So you can see it kind of lasted for more iterations when we built the survivability objective into the design. And the isolation time, well, I should define that. This is the time it takes until a node can access another serving node. So it's going to be greater than disconnection time, but it's the time when a node finds itself in a component that doesn't contain another serving node. And again, it isn't quite so clear-cut this time, but, perhaps the survivability and traffic model. Yeah, obviously, these two designs, which didn't incorporate any kind of traffic optimization, they're pretty poor. But again, you can see from the final two columns that building survivability into it seems to make a bit of a difference. What have we got next? This is, sorry about the inconsistency in notation, this is non-application traffic, it's just the traffic overhead again. And this is a time 0, time 100, time 500, and time 1,000. And we can see that the traffic level is minimum in the case where we optimize just with respect to survivability and traffic. The worst one being the initial one, but these two columns here, where survivability wasn't optimized for, pretty poor. So, okay, just to recap, we specified design objectives for mobile ad hoc networks using high gain stable direction antennae. We've identified desirable network characteristics in terms of a graph theoretic model. Those we focused on are reliability, connectivity, server traffic overheads, and kind of survivability. But surely power consumption is going to be a very important issue here, and many others, I'm sure. We produced optimized designs with respect to these objectives using a taboo search. And as I said, this is not the way forward because of computation time. And we've then evaluated the designs using a simple simulator, just on a test case. I can appreciate that that's not really adequate either. In terms of future work, I don't have a future work slide, but the ultimate objective is really to kind of get some kind of, well, to keep in the spirit of ad hoc networks, we need to have a kind of distributed implementation of this thing. At the moment, it relies on some kind of external entity, so yes, well, that link and your link and build those links. Perhaps the serving node infrastructure could go some way to do this computation. I feel that's another drawback of this taboo search method, is that perhaps it's difficult to implement in a distributed fashion. And then I think that what we actually try and aim for, rather than just build the best network we can and let it go until it fails, we'd like to kind of build in a more dynamic kind of approach where we say, well, if a link fails there, well, then the nodes can look around and say, well, what's available to me? Well, I can either make this link, or that link, and make an informed choice then as to which one to actualize, if you like, according to certain objectives. And, well, that's about does it.